We're in Genesis chapter number 46. I'm going to start in verse 28 as we start today. We have just seen that detailed list of the family and clan names that the readers of the book of Genesis would be very interested in, because all of them tie back in their genealogies to a name or a couple of names that are on this list. And so this is part of Israeli culture, to think especially about the number 70 being so important to them. A big thing is the 70 of the Sanhedrin leadership. You will notice in the New Testament that Jesus, when he sends out disciples, not the apostles only, but disciples in two by two groups to take the declaration of the gospel, his arrival as the Messiah to the Israeli people, he selects 70 in order to send them out in 35 teams to do this. So that's tied back into the number 70 being so important to the Israeli people. One last thing. Traditionally, the Israelis said that there were 70 people groups of the world. And when you go back to the Table of Nations in chapter 10 of Genesis, if you count it properly, you can come up with 70 as a number there. And the Israeli people believed that each one of their base family and tribal groups was to govern one of the people groups of the nations. That was kind of a traditional sort of thing. And that just lets you know it's all coming out of this story in Genesis of their arrival in Egypt, where they change from a family into a people group. Genesis chapter 46, 28. Jacob, or Israel, had sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to show the way before him in Goshen. So Judah is the official heir of Israel. When Israel passes away, Judah will become the patriarch of Tent City, of the family group. Because even though he's son number four, sons one through three have disgraced themselves in some form or fashion so that they've been disinherited from becoming the next patriarch. So Judah has this responsibility of going ahead as kind of a prepare for our arrival sort of emissary. And so the whole group then came into the land of Goshen. Joseph has already determined that that's where they are going to set up. It's close to the capital city, only about a day's travel. It is very lush and green and a perfect place for his family to move into. The people that might have been working that region for Pharaoh, because remember, the people work for Pharaoh now. So the people that might have been working that stretch of one of the seven branches of the Nile have probably been relocated away from there to make room for Joseph's family. And this will become their incubator. This is their hothouse area where they will be separate in large part from the Egyptian people over the next 430 years. Verse 29, then Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, in Goshen. So Judah makes sure that Joseph is aware. Father is arriving. Our entourage is arriving at Goshen. And so they're all going to get there pretty much at the same time. And then this is what happened. He presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. So Joseph, a man of 39 years, a man who has been the number two ruler of Egypt for 8 years. He's working on year number 9 right now because it's the second year of the famine. A man of great dignity and power. He comes up to his aged father and becomes that 17-year-old all over again. Just falls on his neck and cries. He sobs. And he does this for a good long time. And what's Dad's response? Israel said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face and know that you are still alive." Now he is not giving up on life. It's idiomatic. Basically, now I can die in peace because I've seen you alive again. Verse 31, Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh and will say to him, 'My brothers and my father's household who were in the land of Canaan have come to me. The men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. And when Pharaoh calls you and says, "What is your occupation?" you shall say, "Your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers, in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians." So Joseph is doing a little bit of manipulation, we would say. He's playing the both sides of the story here to make sure that his family gets left alone, that they become part of a region that is Israeli only. And he plays on the idea that Egyptians have got this thing, apparently, about lice and fleas. Remember that they shave off their body hair. They wear fake hair. They wear fake beards. They draw on their eyebrows and things like that because they don't want to take any chances, apparently, with body hair. Well, they also have, perhaps for the same reason or similar reasons, this thing about woolly sheep. They don't want to be around woolly sheep, and they don't want to be around people that keep woolly sheep. So this would be a really good mechanism for the full-blood Egyptians to stay away from the Israelis. If the Israelis say, "Well, we've been shepherds for many generations, and we got lots of sheep, and really we plan on keeping the sheep." And so that will let them live in Goshen and everybody stays away. And apparently it works. So chapter 47, Joseph went in and he told Pharaoh, "My father and my brothers with their flocks and herds and all that they possess have come to the land from the land of Canaan. They are now in the land of Goshen." So he informs Pharaoh. Remember that Pharaoh is younger than the last guy that Joseph worked for, because this is the son of the past Pharaoh. And so Joseph is more like a father figure to him. So he basically informs him, "I've already settled my family into the land of Goshen." By the way, Goshen appears to be some sort of Egyptian word, and I think some people think it's got something to do with approach, so that it might have been part of the approach coming to the delta from the east side of the delta. But anyway, I've got him settled in the land of Goshen. And then his anticipation is that Pharaoh will approve of that decision. And so to help it, he introduces some of his brothers to Pharaoh. Verse number 2. From among his brothers, he took 5 men and presented them to Pharaoh. Now, I'd like to know which 5, but the text doesn't bother to tell us that. But you need to picture again in your head the distinction of appearance between the Egyptians and the Israelis. The Israelis are Semites, and this time period that we're looking at in the 1800s BC in Egypt, we have wall paintings of Semites coming out of Canaan to Egypt. And so you see them right alongside each other and the way that they're dressed. The Semites are dressed in tunics and sandals, and the tunics are sometimes very colorful. They have beards and woolly hair. But the Egyptians are barefoot. They've got little white kilts on them and no shirt. And if they're a high-placed person, they might have a gold necklace or neck shield on, but the normal workers don't have that sort of thing. And they don't have any natural hair. It's gone. It's missing. They might have a wig, but that's the way the two groups look. The Pharaoh himself is going to be in that category of white kilt, big gold neck shield. He's got a special headdress on to show his authority, but probably a false little beard and maybe a wig if he's going to wear anything underneath that special headdress. And so here come Joseph's family, 5 of the men. They're in their 40s, they got beards, and they've got that Semite look to them with the clothing from Canaan. And so they said to Pharaoh, "Your servants are shepherds." Pharaoh said to them first, "What is your occupation? What do you guys do for a living?" Because remember, Pharaoh is in charge of job placements. He is now controlling completely the economy. The economy is centralized. So what are your occupations? Thinking probably, you know, what are you going to do while you're here in this country? They said to Pharaoh, "Your servants are shepherds as our fathers were." So exactly what Joseph told them to say. They said to Pharaoh, "We have come to sojourn in the land, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now please let your servants dwell in the land of Canaan." So here comes the official request from them, which has already been presented as a fait accompli by Joseph. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Your father and your brothers have come to you." Now, that's a statement of celebration. It's not like, "Hey, did you know your brothers and your father has come to you?" It's like, "Wow, I'm so happy for you that your family have come. The land of Egypt is before you. You settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. You let them settle in the land of Goshen. And if you know any able men among them, put them in charge of my livestock." So the Egyptians, although they wouldn't want to be around woolly sheep, apparently they do have a taste for mutton. Or maybe they like to be able to use the wool for certain purposes. So they keep them, but not personally. So he says, "Joseph, put them in the land of Goshen, just like you said. That's a good spot for them, away from everybody else. And if any of them are particularly good about it, put them in charge of the sheep that I have. And so Joseph brought Jacob his father and stood him before Pharaoh. So now it is time for Pharaoh to meet Dad. And Dad, and this is an important part of this part of the story, Dad is 130 years old. There is zero doubt that he is older than anyone this Pharaoh has ever seen in his entire life. The Egyptians are not long-lived like this line of Abraham. And so here comes Jacob into the audience chamber, and he is motivating under his own power. I mean, he might have a staff that he's using to get around, but he is relatively healthy and very wrinkled, I have no doubt. Very sun-cured, I am sure, as well. And so here comes Jacob, and the first thing that he does is he puts a blessing on Pharaoh, because he's the older guy. And in the custom, particularly of the Israeli people, the older blesses the younger. And so Pharaoh receives a special blessing from Father Israel. And then Pharaoh said to Jacob, "How many are the days of the years of your life?" And you can actually see that in your head, can't you? How old are you, right? And Jacob said back to Pharaoh, "The days of my sojourning are 130 years." Now that helps in establishing the chronology. And then he says this, "Few and evil," rotten is kind of the idea, hard, "have been the days of the years of my life. They have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning." So even though Pharaoh is in awe of how ancient Jacob is, Jacob says, "I'm still young compared to those that came before me. They were much older than I am. And my life's kind of been rough on me," which was true. Think about all the things that have happened to him since he left home at the age of 77 and went up to Haran and had to spend 14 years working super hard as a shepherd out there in the blazing heat and the freezing cold and all the other things that he described about his life. And then all the sad things that have happened as well. And so the audience finishes up with Jacob blessing Pharaoh again. So he blesses him when he comes in, and he blesses him as he's going out. So Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from the presence of Pharaoh. And then Joseph settled his father and his brothers and gave them possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses. Now, this can confuse a lot of people. Ramesses is not a reference to a pharaoh. The pharaoh, much later, has a similar name to the region that we're talking about here. Ramesses, if you put your finger across the letter M and everything behind it, you see the name of the sun god, Ra, or Re. And then Menses, that's very close to Moses, which in Hebrew had the idea of coming out or going forth. And so Ramesses is another name for the region of Goshen, which has the idea of this is the place from which the god sun or the sun god goes. And Heliopolis, the city of On in the time of Joseph, may have been right at the edge of this region because it was the temple city for the worship of the sun god of the Egyptians. And so Ramesses will come up in the story of the Exodus later. And some people have dated the Exodus way too late because they try to make that a reference to a city built by a later pharaoh that just happens incidentally to have the same sort of name. All right, so he settles them in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had commanded. And then Joseph provided his father, his brothers, and all his father's household with food according to the number of their dependents. So Joseph, who is in charge of the distribution of food, makes special provision that his family receives sufficient rations out of the stores of the Egyptian government. And so they have nothing to fear for the next 5 years. They will be fed and housed at Joseph's expense for the next several years and protected in that way. Now, at this point, we have to go back and talk about Joseph's job. Remember that he is the savior of the Egyptian people by the means of knowing there would be 7 years of extreme plenty followed by 7 years of extreme drought. And this is the story of what he did administering that. Verse 13, now there was no food in all the land, for the famine was very severe, so that the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished by reason of the famine. Now, I believe that we're talking about either the third or the fourth year of the famine by the time we get to verse number 13. Many of the Egyptians, being warned ahead of time, may have tried to save up a little bit of the 7 years of plenty. But it's possible, even likely, that they may not have taken it as seriously as they should. So by the time we get to year number 4 or 5, they may have run themselves out of supplies. And even though there is probably irrigation efforts going on down by the edge of the ever-dwindling Nile River, that is not going to go as far as needed when you're trying to feed all of these people, plus your animals, and making sure you have seed stock and stuff like that. So they now have run out completely out of personal stores. Verse number 14, Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan in exchange for the grain that they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. So once the Egyptians ran out of their own personal stores, they had to start spending their silver, gold if they had any, in order to receive food out of the storehouses. That's the way it was set up. Verse number 15, when the money was all spent in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, give us food. Why should we die before your eyes? For our money is gone. So now we've probably moved to you know, fourth, fifth year of the famine, and maybe even the sixth. And not only is all their food stores gone, now all of their reserve precious metal store is gone. It's all been shifted to Pharaoh himself. And we're not talking about just the little people here. The bigger issue that is borne out in Egyptian history is that Lower Egypt had regional rulers that kind of paid a little bit of homage to the Pharaoh, but they were kind of their own little autocrats in their region. Well, those guys have run on hard times, and so they are also having to pay their cash reserves, their gold and silver reserves, to the Pharaoh. And so Joseph answered, well, give your livestock, and I'll give you food in exchange for your livestock if your money is gone. So they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them food in exchange for the horses, the flocks, the herds, the donkeys. He supplied them with food in exchange for all their livestock that year. So now he takes property, the idea of animal property, breeding stock, from these folks. It allows him then to pay them with grain. Well, there's only one last thing left, and that's verse 18. When that year was ended, they came to him the following year. Now, this has got to be the sixth, maybe the seventh year. And they said to him, we will not hide from our Lord. Our money is all spent. The herds of livestock are all my Lord's. There is nothing left in the sight of my Lord but our bodies and our land. So the only thing of value left at this point in the famine is property and persons. Come back next time and we'll talk about that.